folks. This is Lauren Hunt with another episode of the Guitar Podcast. Thanks for tuning in again. This is episode number 26. To those of you new to the Guitar Podcast, I want you to know that what I talk about here is my opinion from my experience with guitars, amps, and effects, and so on. Please chime in with comments and questions to my email at info@theguitarpodcast.net. Also, please go to theguitarpodcast.net, check out the updated website. You can sign up for email alerts. I'll send you an email whenever a new episode comes out or if a new video comes out. I promise not to spam you or to send or to sell your name and email to spammers. This is just to alert you whenever a new episode comes out. If that appeals to you, go for it. You'll be added to my private list. On to the topic at hand. I've seen a lot of discussion about pedal boards and the order in which pedals should go on a board and what cords, cables, and such should be used. And honestly, I think it really comes down to personal preference and what works for you, what you can afford, all that sort of thing. But I will say a little bit about the order on a pedal. Well, let's start out with the different kinds of cables you can use to connect your pedals. You can get fairly inexpensive patch cables that are all of about, I don't know, 4 inches long, including the jacks. And you know, they're a set length and they're not very expensive, and you can get a lot of those, and you can string a good pedal board together. They're higher end, like bullet cables and things like that, you can get a hold of that are really nice. I prefer George L's. They're solderless cables. Some people have frowned upon the solderless cables. They have concerns about them. I have not had concerns about them. I don't have issues with them. If you put them together correctly and test them a lot, you should be just fine with them. The nice thing about them is you can cut them to length. You can get, you know, several feet of George L cable, and then a bunch of connector ends, a dozen or so or whatever, however many you think you'll need for your pedal board, and cut them to length and then attach the ends, test them, and then hook your pedals up, test them again. You know, testing every step of the way is very important whenever you're building your pedal board. Now we got cables out of the way, we could talk a bit about the power sources. I know a lot of people with smaller pedal boards may want to stick with 9-volt batteries and not rely on, they may be concerned about any interference that would come through a direct power source. But you know, if you want to use 9 volts, always keep a lot of 9 volts on hand. Mm-hmm. Now then, even if you don't use 9-volt batteries, I still would suggest you have several 9 volts on hand whenever you're playing, either practice or wherever, at home or at shows. Certainly shows, you know, you want to have kind of an emergency bag with strings and wire cutters, a string winder, batteries, all sorts of things. We'll cover some of that stuff in another episode. But, you know, you want to think about those sorts of things. Just keep that in mind. Back to the topic of power supply. Gator makes a power supply I used, and that was kind of nice. It was small. It didn't take up very much space on my board, but it didn't power as many pedals as I, you know, wanted to have on my pedal board at the time. I personally use Voodoo Labs pedal power. It's really nice, reliable, strong. There's an outlet on the back of it so that you can power another power source, another pedal power. Another pedal, you know, that has like a wall wart or something like that. It's very clean power. It's very nice. What I do with that pedal, with that outlet on the back of it, is I go into another power strip, and that's where all my wall warts go. So I'm feeding clean power to that power strip, and then directly from the power source, from that pedal power, I'm sending lines out to all the pedals. And of course they can pedal up to a power up to 18 volt pedals that require 18 volt power, And then you have some that, that have sag, so that it sounds like, now some people like the sound of a almost dying or a lower power 9-volt, an older 9-volt battery in overdrive pedals, namely like the OD808 or the TS808, the tube screamers, your overdrives, your distortion pedals. You can flip that sag switch, and it makes it sound. It just kind of cuts that sound, the power just a little bit to give it that. I think it gives it kind of a mushy sound, like an old 50s amp cranked, just kind of a little bit of a sag. I don't use it. I don't use that sag switch, but if you like that, it's there. And that may be what some people like to stick with 9-volt batteries, is because when it gets to that point where in the battery's life, maybe be a sweet spot for them. But you know what, you wouldn't have to worry about that with this particular power source. Like I said, there are several power sources out there. This one runs about $180. There are a lot of different ones out there. Some more expensive, some less expensive. Some are a lot more expensive and really have a lot more features and really super cool. But this is what I have on my pedal board. It's what I go with. It seems to be serving me fairly well. And I play out, I don't know, a dozen or two dozen times a year, just depending on whatever the workload is, whatever needs to happen. So, I mean, I'm not, you know, I'm more or less a weekend warrior at this point in my life. I don't play a ton. I'm sure there are some of you who are listening to this show who play out every weekend or maybe several times a week. Some of you may only play out once a month. Some of you don't play at all. And there's nothing wrong with that. I'm just telling you where I'm coming from with this. So we've covered cables and we've covered a power source. So say, you know, a fully stocked pedal board, in my opinion, would have a couple, you know, maybe a compression or EQ and overdrive pedals, distortion pedals or whatever. Those all control the tone. It's either distortion or overdrive or tone or whatever. Those go first. I think that's been a kind of a consensus amongst all guitar players. I'm sure there may be some people who say they flip that around, but I don't know. Maybe that goes into that unique sound that people want to have for their amps or their guitar. But I highly recommend having those pieces first. Now then, if you have a wah pedal, if you're into that sort of thing, there's an argument for having it at the very beginning of your signal chain, before all your distortion and overdrive pedals. Then there's an argument for people who want to have it after. You know, I've heard people say that they have very negative results, really bad sound, fuzzy, fizzy sound out of their wah pedals when it's after all their drives. Now, I'm not sure. I mean, I have mine after my drive. I actually have it after my volume pedal. So what I have, my signal chain, it goes into compressor, into a couple overdrives, a clean boost, and my boost goes after the pedals. Some people will say that they want it before the pedal so that the boost is pushing into the clipping chips for the pedals. I'm not really on board with all that. I think I'd rather boost that signal to the amp and that it hammers the amp and not those pedals. I think those pedals are designed to do what they do. And then, so I mean, you know, like on my death rattle pedal, I have a choice in making that boost before the distortion and overdrive or after. And I choose after. And it's all personal preference. If it sounds right to you, go with that. You know, let your ear be your guide in any of this. So then back to the wah pedal issue. I'm not sure if what people are running into is these newer wah pedals with newer components, and they don't interact very well with distortion running through them at first, or not, because I know my wah pedal is from the early 70s, has a different chip in it, and I mean, I was playing on it today, and played the same song I don't know how many times for practice, rehearsal, and then the two actual performances. I thought it sounded fine, although I really didn't have anything before it other than my compression. The compression does add a little bit of bite to it, but not much. I could still get a nice clean tone. It just makes it, I guess you could, you know, if you really wanted to get down and dirty with it, you could say that the compressor has a little bit of dirt to it, but it's really not much of anything. So I thought it sounded fine, and I was really trying to get kind of a clean sound from it. So I was strumming with my thumb instead of a pick because I didn't want that sharp sound. So, I mean, it sounded fine. But what I would suggest to you is sit down, have your overdrives all on a chain, whatever you want to have, whichever ones you prefer to use with a wah, put the wah before it, before all those, and play a little bit. And I would say record it. Listen to that with several different, call it out. Say, this is the wah before the TS-808 at my normal setting. This is the wah before DS-1 or OCD or whatever pedal you're using. And then move the wah to the end and do the same thing. Call it out so that you can hear that. That you know what you're going to hear is my wah after whatever pedal it is. And then take a break, let your ears refresh, kind of cleanse your ears palate of all the guitar noise it's been hearing, because at some point it's all going to start sounding the same. Your ears just going to be like, whatever, I'm just doing this thing. You know, as long as it's in tune and sounds right, I'm going for it. Then come back and listen to that recording, and then start making notes, making judgments from there, and then, you know, say, okay, I liked this tone, this sounded right, then try that again. Say you liked it with the wah pedal before whatever, you know, distortion. Play it like that and see how that is, and then step away again, let your ears recover, and then go back. And if you liked it the other way, I mean, try it again. And, I mean, if you really want to get detailed on this, that's what I would do. Because I know there are enough people that do it both ways. And one guy will say, oh, the wah pedal has to be before the overdrives. And then other people would say the opposite. I'm saying, let your ear be the decision maker on this. Some things are they have to be the way they are. I definitely think that your overdrive should be the beginning of your signal chain. Whether or not you have your volume, whether or not you have your wah before or after them, that's where they belong. Now next, I have my volume pedal right after all that. That is because, say, in between songs, I can cut my volume off and you don't hear that shh of a hot overdrive pedal or distortion pedal. You don't hear that at all whenever I turn that on. And then whenever I'm ready to play, I stop my volume pedal on and I start playing. You don't hear that fuzz. I mean, that fizzy, that white noise. All you hear is beautiful overdriven guitar tone singing in your ear. And then whenever I'm stopped, you know, I mean, because I don't necessarily want to stomp on a pedal and turn the volume on or have the volume up and possibly the audience hears some string noise or whatever, and then I stomp on a pedal and hear a click or whatever. I prefer to have it all ready to go, and then I put the pedal down on the volume and I'm rocking. So that's just my approach. I know there are people who have it at the very beginning of their pedal chain, and that's fine. But if your volume's all the way down, it's just cutting the guitar signal off from the rest of the signal or from the rest of the chain. It's not going to quiet those pedals or those, you know, the white noise you get from overdrives and distortions when they're really pushing a lot. Now, most of the time, I don't have to deal with that a whole lot, but with that noise issue, that if I have my OCD on and it's ready to go for a song, it will have a little bit of that white noise, just a little bit. If you're playing some super metal, you're going to run into that, and you might want to have a noise gate after. But and that's another story. That's something I don't deal a whole lot with. For what I'm playing, I should never need a noise gate. I'm not playing death metal, and I'm not sure even if I was playing death metal, I would use a noise gate. But noise gate's up to you. Noise suppression, you know, that's up to you. I think your signal should be clean enough to where you don't have to worry about that, no matter how much distortion and scooping of the EQ you're doing. You know, you're doing playing ultra death metal or whatever. I don't care. I don't know that you need it if you're using good quality equipment. Now the next thing is, after your overdrives, distortions, compression, wah, wherever you put your wah on the chain, and the volume pedal, come your time-based effects or your modulation effects. When what I'm talking about there with time-based effects, I'm talking about your delays, analog or digital delay, and I'm not sure if you'd call tremolo the time-based thing. I guess that's more modulation. And when I'm talking about modulation, I'm talking about your phasers, your flanger, chorus, all those that bend the note in some way or another, or whether it's out of phase or repeats, anything like that. They should come after your distortions, and they in whatever order you decide. I go right to the delay, and then I have the phaser from there. So I phase the signal after that. I may be better served to flip-flop that. I very rarely use the phaser. I think it's really super cool, and I love that have a cigar tone, that sound. I love that. It's really super cool. You get a lot of Pink Floyd. I turn that thing on and just think Pink Floyd whenever I play. There are certainly other things you get with that, but I really love my phaser. I'm wondering if a really high-end flanger might do a similar thing for me, and I might be happier with that and have more settings and control. But anyway, that stuff should all go at the end. Now, in a perfect world, if your amp has an effects loop, it would say, now, neither one of my amps have effects loops. I'm pretty sure my Marshall does not. I don't think they doing it at that time with Marshalls. I know my 56 Gibson amp certainly does not have an effects loop. There's just no way. But say I have an amp with an effects loop. What I would do is I'd go from my guitar into the compression and overdrives and the wah pedal and the volume pedal. Oh, one other thing is, I have an Ernie Ball volume pedal that has a little bypass jack that'll go out to the tuner. And I can have the tuner on at all times. Signal does not go through the tuner. It never passes through that circuitry into the rest of the pedals and out. It doesn't affect the tone at all. And I can turn the volume down on my pedal, on my volume pedal, and tune up my guitar at any time. Well, of course, when I'm not needing to be, heard, when I shouldn't be playing or whatever, that's whenever I can do that. But I really love that feature about that pedal, that Ernie Ball. They have the Junior. I don't have a Junior. I have the full size when it's big. I think the Junior is a little more popular because it takes up less real estate on your pedal board. I just found a really good deal on this one and said, hey, I'm going to do this. Save money. It's the same thing. I don't mind the real estate it takes up. It's almost, I don't know, I guess I like it better. I don't really have really big feet per se, but I don't know. I like having something big to stomp on. But I would say from there, the signal would go to the amp, that I would take my cord and go right to the input of the amp, so that all the tone-based effects are affecting the front end of the amp. Then you're going into your tone components, your overdrive, you know, into the tubes and all that. But then with your effects loop out, send that into your first tone, first time-based or modulation-based pedal, and go through that whole chain, and then send that back into the end of your effects loop. It's a much cleaner way of affecting the sounds in your amp, because it goes back to the whole reason why I wouldn't want to have my delay before my overdrive or anything like that. Because essentially, when you plug into your amp, if it has any overdrive to it at all, I mean, whenever you plug into it, if it's tube, it's gonna have a little bit of hair on it, where, you know, if you turn it up louder or whatever, if it has any kind of gain control, if you're hitting it with a lot of volume, it's gonna hammer the front end and create a little bit more overdrive or distortion. So then that delay, that time-based modulation or whatever, is gonna be affected there. So I don't want that affected. I want that the last thing in my chain before it goes out to the speakers. So, I mean, I can't do that right now. And even if I did have an effects loop where I perform, my guitar amp is, I don't know, 50 feet away. And my signal goes from my pedal board into a direct box, into an XLR through the stages network of cables backstage 50 feet away, and then comes out into another direct box and then into my amp. Now then, if I were to do what I want to do, what I would love to do, is I would have to have three of those setups. That'd be three direct boxes. And, you know, I don't think they're going to accommodate that for me. I'm not going to ask that of them. So, but that's what I would have to deal with, and be sure that everything is set up correct. That's just three times the risk of something going wrong in that situation. Now, if your amp is right behind you on stage, you could do that big time. Something else that I have heard people do, whose guitar player is it? I don't even remember his name. I don't remember his name or who he's playing for, but basically he runs his pedals into his amp, and then he mics his amp, and from that mic, that goes into his time-based and modulation-based effects, and then goes into another amp to make, I think that's probably like a clean power amp in a rack or something like that, so that you're really getting the sound. He's modulating every bit of the driver end of the amp, because, you know, if you really think about it, whenever you push a speaker hard, they break up too. So it's not just your preamp tubes overdriving, or whenever you turn it up really loud, that your big power tubes are overdriving, but whenever they're pushing a lot of volume through your speakers, they distort too. So there are three main areas of distortion that naturally occur in an amp that is supposed to distort. So I just thought that was really interesting that he was able to do that. But I think you'd have to have like an isolated cabinet of some sort to really pull that off. But yeah, I'm not going to do that. But if you want to, if you have the funds or the means, go for it. Love to hear about it. Oh, I think it's Kelly Clarkson's guitar player does that. It's really pretty cool. Anyway, I guess I shouldn't talk about it too much when I don't know the full story about how he goes about it, but it's really kind of an interesting way of looking at it. But, you know, in an ideal world, use your effects loop. If you can't, if you want to use a vintage amp like I do, I use that 56 Gibson GA40 amp that's 14 watts. I can turn it up really loud and get a sweet spot, and it's not terribly loud. It's not taking people's head off. I have it probably about 8, 8.5 volume, And if I did that to my marshal, they would hate me. They would tell me to leave. It would not be good. So anyway, that's my take on the what I would put on a pedal board, and kind of the order of pedals on the board. Something else is that, you know, if you don't already know how to fasten your pedals to the board, what I do is I go to Lowe's and I pick up a strip. I think it's about, I don't know, 20 feet of industrial Velcro. It's about 2 inches wide, about 20 feet long, and it's already connected. You just cut it to size, peel off the plastic backing for the adhesive, and stick it to the pedal, and then wherever you want the other end, you know, on your board, stick it there. Now, what I did was I just coated the whole bottom of my, basically carpeted my pedal board with the soft fuzzy part of the Velcro, and then the more scratchy part of the Velcro I put on the back of my pedals. So that's how I attach them. They hold, it holds some very heavy pedals. My volume pedal is very heavy. My wah pedal is pretty heavy. So it does a really good job at holding heavy pedals. They advertise that you put that on the side of a 20-ounce hammer and stick it on the wall in your shop. I just use it. It works pretty well. It's not the cheapest Velcro to get, but, you know, these aren't cheap pedals you're using more than likely if you're at this point. But, yeah, that's how you basically go about it. I'm sure that you can go on YouTube and look at somebody like Gear Man Dude, where he shows how to set up your pedal train pedal board, which is kind of small for what I mean. I just wanted to do a whole lot. So anyway, you know, check that out. Give that a shot. I hope this helped out with your pedal board, your next pedal board build, or if you wanted to modify what you already had, or went, oh, you know, I want to try that. You know, that's a solution I'm looking for, or whatever, you know. But in any case, with your pedal board, your signal chain, let your ear be the guide. If it sounds bad to you, man, just don't do it. Use the tone that appeals the best to you and make it your own. It is your art. And with that, I'm going to call it an episode. Please chime in with comments and questions to info at the Guitar Podcast. I'll either reply back by email or on a future show. This is Lauren Hunt signing off for the Guitar Podcast.